Bonjour, ni hao, comment estas? This is John James, and welcome to Champagne Strategy. This is a red pill business podcast, which deconstructs world-class strategy, focusing on growth, marketing, and sales, with just a sprinkling of tech and champagne. Listen to this episode if you dare, but you've been warned, there's no going back. So we've already done one episode with Tim Beanland about how to start a podcast and all the basics around doing that. Eventually you get to the level where maybe you're gaining some traction, like mine is and like some of my friends are, and you need to really take the podcast to the next level. And that's all about promotion. So just last week, I had three different people approach me and go, John, how do you promote a podcast? And look, I couldn't really give them a proper answer apart from the fact that, you know, create good quality content and we'll sort of go from there. But if we had budget, if there was a pressing need to make our audio production a lot bigger than it was, what do you do? I couldn't really think of any other things except from using social media, using your newsletter, and ensuring good quality. And one of my good friends, Yaniv Bernstein and Chris Saud, who are co-hosts of the Startup Podcast, which is getting rave reviews, by the way, Yaniv actually asked me this as well. And last week, I had to admit to myself that I didn't know how to really go about promoting a podcast, apart from using the basic sort of strategy and tactical side of things that I knew works for content. So this created the start for my journey. I reached out to four or five different people, and it was surprisingly hard to find people who specialize in podcast promotion. I came across a company called Ample Media, and in this episode, we talk to Josh and Michelle. Now, Josh is the founder and executive producer, so he has a much more in-depth view on the production side of things, but he's also across everything else. And Michelle is the general manager, and she goes a lot deeper into the promotion side of things. Ample Media is an audio experience agency, and they specialize in strategy, creative production, and distribution, the last of which we're going to concentrate most on in this episode. So this podcast is in two parts. The first 30 minutes or so is with Josh, and I talk about mostly the history behind how podcasting started, which is really interesting, and then later around the production side of things, and we get quite tactical here if you want to find out how to create a quality episode that sells itself. And at the end, we brush on some promotional side of things. Then just about the 35-minute mark, we go straight into talking to Michelle in a separate interview. And Michelle goes a lot deeper with me on the promotional side of things, how to use partnerships, paid versus unpaid, social, repurposing content, and everything else in between. So sit back and relax, and hopefully at the end of this episode, you'll get a really good grounding in how to promote your podcast, but also how to promote yourself on other people's podcasts, which is a really good channel that I think is underestimated just because the area is so gray and people aren't really sure how to go about doing it. And a lot of agencies don't really offer this service, which is why we're doing this episode. And just want to note that when I was interviewing Josh, he was really time poor and I had a small slice of time, and he had to do this at his desk inside an open plan office. So there's a lot of background noise, and that wasn't intentional. That was me being very impatient. So just discount that from the quality of any of the production that they can produce. And the same goes for Michelle. Again, very time poor, and she had a headset and I was getting her in between meetings. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Josh and then Michelle. So here today, we're talking to Josh about podcasting, specifically more on the promotion side of things. Josh, obviously, you come from a production background. My first question, though, is very simple. What is a podcast and what isn't a podcast?
Does it matter?
Not really. Is it an MP3? You know, can you embed something in a media player? Is a YouTube interview a podcast? Where did it originate anyway, the name?
It originated like 20-odd years ago. I can't remember the guy's name, but a tech nerd wanted to deliver audio packets. The podcast term came about in like 2005. Apple really elevated podcasts to a thing by including it in the iPhone. So I think Apple really made it mainstream. Before that, it was kind of very underground. Kind of started as like the Chumcast, which is two guys talking about something, or two people talking about something who are friends.
And then still is a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Like there's a whole different variety of podcasts. You can have informative podcasts that are interviews like this between two strangers. You can have a narrative. I think, you know, if you chart the history of podcasting in the mid-2000s as it was getting going, it was really the domain of tech people, you know, tech-enabled computer people. After that, you know, you found some people like Mark Maron, who started by doing his own version of that. Tim Ferriss, obviously.
Tim Ferriss, yeah.
Yeah,
Joe Rogan,
those guys have been around for a very long time. But then NPR kind of kicked in the late 2000s, Radio Lab, This American Life, Planet Money, you know, those shows were radio shows first. Jad Abumrad's first podcast for Radio Lab was called The Radio Lab. This American Life tried to do audio documentary in a way that hadn't kind of been done before. Ira Glass did not sound good for about 7 years. And then, you know, Alex Bloomberg with Planet Money. And then you've got, like, I think the history of NPR podcasting.
Sorry, what's NPR podcasting?
National Public Radio out of the United States. So NPR really kind of led the podcasting movement because they were a radio station that could do it. But it kind of hit its straps with Serial in 2014, which redefined what a podcast was. Because, like, you know, a podcast was two people, you know, people chatting, doing an interview. Then it became able to be, you know, even though This American Life existed, Serial took it to the next level. And then Alex Bloomberg released Startup Podcasts, which the first couple of episodes were like an audio blog, really, more than a podcast. And he was good at 15-minute shows. So his early episodes are like 8 to 15 minutes. But in the first or second episode, he talked about ads. And rather than just doing an ad, like a radio ad, he interviewed the sponsor of the show. And he asked the guy, how much does this podcast ad cost you? I think the answer was like $5,000 or something like that, which is about right still. And then ads became really interesting. Reply All came out. Mystery Show came out. Startup became massive. And then it just exploded.
Now everyone's doing it. I mean, including me, you, lots of other people, lots of sort of personal branding sort of people started doing it as well. So if you had to like discuss where it's going, I mean, what are the sort of more modern iterations that you're seeing popularized right now?
So anything can be a podcast, but is everything a podcast? No, right? There is audio education. So you go to a doctor, they hand you a pamphlet. So you can have that pamphlet now in audio form. That is not a podcast. That's an audio pamphlet. If you're doing a how to put up a tent, that is not a podcast. That is, you know, a how to put up a tent in audio form. If you're doing an internal podcast, then it...
Just explain what an internal podcast is.
Right. So like a company can have their own podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about their business. And there are lots of businesses.
Like a town hall sort of meeting thing or...
Yeah. So you could have a weekly one. So it could be town hall, weekly town hall, monthly, quarterly update, the annual report. It could be for a new startup. You can hear it rather than have to read it via email or watch it on a video. And it can be just for your team, so it can be really secure. So that's not.
So I asked you before about this because I'm like, well, why would you use audio format, right? Versus video. Like, why can't you just do a video like we're doing now? Like, I strip out the audio for the podcast, but like, you know, why not video? And this is the objection that comes up all the time.
Well, it's very simple. Firstly, you're 3.5 times more engaged if you're just listening. You've got no distractions.
Just blocking off one of the senses and you're sort of absorbing more.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So there's that. Plus also for the people who aren't watching a video version of this, you have no idea what I look like. And therefore, if you had bias about what I look like, if I'm not, you know, not attractive enough or if my hair's messy or if you don't like what I'm wearing, you know, all that's gone. And so you can just hear what the person actually has to say. I think if you look at the person all the time, your brain makes some weird connections. Whereas if you think about, you know, when you had a relationship with a person at a bank or a person like from the place where you hide gear from, you know, you never would have seen that person before. You don't care what they look like. It's, you know, it's genuinely not important. And so, you know, that bias is gone when you have just voice. And then remember when you finally met that person in real life and you're like, oh, yeah, you look like this. Oh, cool. But you don't care what they look like now because you've formed that connection. Think of Die Hard. It's like he's on the phone to the cop the whole time. And then right at the very end, like the cop who saved his life, you know, the hug and the embrace, and it didn't matter what they looked like. They had this amazing connection. Audio can do that. And so audio can be embedded very easily on a website. It can be listened to on your phone. It can be listened to in your computer, in your car, at the gym, wherever you want, while you wash the car, while you're ironing.
That's a good point. People tend to, like, and I've had this feedback as well, people tend to listen to them while they're doing some mundane activity. It's like a multitasking thing. Then you can't do that if you've got video because you're mopping the floor or whatever. You can't have a YouTube thing in front of you. Like, you know, you just put the earphones in.
And that's right. And that's why audio has a tremendous application beyond external communication as well as internal, which is why we shouldn't be limited by the notion of what a podcast is or isn't.
The next thing is more about the promotion side. So you've been part of quite a few, I would argue, reasonably successful podcasts. You produce them, you're part of a team that then help promote them as well. From your perspective, I mean, what's the difference between a podcast that becomes popular and doesn't? Is it just about the quality of what they're talking about? Is it the people on the show?
It's a hard question to answer because everyone's success metric's different. You know, what is the show and who is the audience? So sure. Success might be 1,000 people listening to an episode. If you're making a brand-funded show and you're trying to get C-level people to do a 12-month contract with you, and so it costs you $100,000 to make the show, but the sale is worth $10 million, and you only need to make one sale. You know, so it's really a matter of what you're trying to achieve.
Put a scenario out there that, like, perhaps you want to go the vanity metric, which is, you know, the listener. So aggregate listeners, we want to go, like, massive.
There's 4 million podcasts, and yet there's 500 minutes of video going up on YouTube every second, right? So it's not like there's a glut of podcasts. There's a glut of everything. So again, you know, some shows, a success metric is 1,500 listeners. Other success metric is 10 new signups. So really, it depends on what you want to achieve. If you're getting more than 1,000 people listening to an episode, you're in the top 1% podcasts. The more successful shows hang around for a lot longer. You got to have heaps of episodes. Shows become very popular after 100 episodes and more because they've got that fan base, they've got the habit. People listening to 5 to 7 podcasts, they're listening to 12 hours of audio, so you can they're listening plenty, and they're listening to multiple episodes of those shows. There are a variety of different ways to promote it. You know, volume is the first thing to consider.
There's this sort of conundrum in the marketing industry, like, hey, more content, post more often, more blogs, you know, equals more success. Is there some sort of truth to that in terms of the more episodes you publish, the more self-fulfilling that is? Or is it just a factor of, like, making sure the quality content is there that's resonating with the core group, which then kind of creates a bit of referral effect and virality and sort of kicks that growth curve up?
You're creating the podcast or the audio for a community. And that community will be different for every show that exists. So, yes, if you start something, you must continue it. And it has to be worth listening to.
Because apparently a lot of people, like, they cut out at about 10 episodes or something. So they'll do it for 10 and then they'll cut out. And you're saying they almost need to go to 100 for it to really realize that full growth potential.
There is a lot of data that supports that.
Wow.
My personal opinion is to get to 100... it's a lot of effort. And if you have a look at some of the new podcasts that are doing really well, they're daily podcasts or they're publishing 2 or 3 times a week. And that's one of the reasons, because they're habitually around. I'm listening to a podcast every single day that I never heard of last year.
Yeah. So it's like small sort of topical news things that come out on a regular basis, right? Versus, you know, what we're doing now, which is a bit more of required a bit of research on my part, finding the right person to talk to. There's a bit more of a craft behind it because we're going deeper into a subject. We can't just talk off the cuff sometimes about these things. So it has to be popular, have to publish enough, have to have good, you know, content. Otherwise people churn, obviously. What is a good quality discussion then? This is use sort of this format, like, it's a longer form, more deeper topical discussion with so much choice around another podcast. I mean, what is a quality podcast that people get hooked and addicted to versus one that is just a bit more fluffy and people churn from?
Firstly, every podcast has to be edited. Forget the equipment. It must be edited. I think while I speak. I'm an R a lot. I go all over the shop. I sound far better when I've edited myself for an hour or two than when I do on the live record. So I would never, ever put that out. You would do that too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had people go, oh, that was terrible after the interview. I said I was all over the place and fluffing. And then they listen to the full thing after I've edited it and snipped all that out. And they go, you made me sound awesome. And really on the ball. I'm like, yeah, you knew what you're talking about. It was just sometimes people are more eloquent and really concise. Other people aren't. And I find some episodes I need to edit a lot more than others. And you can get a really, I reckon, a more snappier, more professional quality from an edit.
So the edit's important. The other thing is scripting. Before we even edit, we would take the video and the audio of whatever we've done. We would rip out the audio and we would chuck it into Sonnet, which is the transcription tool that we use, which we would then change any of the auto transcription errors. We would build our transcript out of that as well, but we take the correct audio from the entire thing, stick it into a master script template. Then we would do a first pass, what's called a paper cut. And that paper cut then lives in a separate template, a script template. And then that's given to the editor. So the editor knows how to do a cut. that person who's done that paper cut is also really important in the process, because they're doing research on upcoming guests and they're preparing whoever's doing the actual interview or the short project. So that's probably a step that you, because you're on your own, you're doing everything yourself. So having that script is really important. You know, being well-researched is important. Having a good guest list, knowing who your guests are in advance is very important. Knowing who's coming up in future episodes. The tech is important, having a decent microphone. And I'm really sorry again, this is all last minute today, but, you know, better audio conditions, you know, quiet room. The don'ts are just record it. I think a massive don't is don't embark on making something and putting it out once a month. It's a waste of time. You're not going to get any results. I think the other don't think of it as a podcast. Think of it as a starting point for a content ecosystem, like what you would do on Instagram. But unlike Instagram, you know, it's a much deeper conversation. So have that, build that community.
I find, you know, podcast is an expression or one channel that really comes from a core strategy, whether that's a content strategy or content production play, and then repurposing this for all the different distribution channels and different things. Maybe use some for sales enablement like I do. Maybe you're using it as little snippets for like a personal branding thing on Instagram Reels, for example, you know, whatever. But I think it all kind of comes from a core, like, okay, why are you doing this? What are you going to talk about? And how are you going to use that to achieve goals? So do you sort of go through that process strategically when you're creating these podcasts? Let's just say someone comes to you going, Josh, look, I've got this idea, I want to do a podcast. And you go, well, and you ask these questions. What are those core questions?
Why? What do you want to achieve? What does your brand sound like? What else are you doing? What do you spend in media? What do you spend in marketing? How much does it cost to make your normal videos? We ask lots of questions like that because all those answers really matter. A lot of companies have no idea how expensive the CEO update is. And if they actually understood that it was costing them $10,000 to $20,000 a time, they would go, that is just a waste of time and money. It's a waste of time to do it in video, in my opinion. It's a waste of resources if you're doing it at that cost price. There are better ways to spend the money. And also, you know, when you are doing a video, you'll have more budget, right? And you can drive that further. And I think, you know, we encourage people to think in series, not in one-offs.
Yep.
Consistency. Yeah. So in terms of, but yeah, everything can be exported for as video. You can have different ways of doing the video. You can have different ways of doing the audio ads. I think repurposing for audio ads is good, for social is good, but that it needs to be coordinated right at the very start.
Coming back to, I just want to hit sort of one of these misconceptions on its head, and that is creating content is free and putting content in social media is free. Maybe there's not a cash component when you're paying an advertiser to promote that content, but it could be a huge, huge usage of people's time, effort, and energy. What would sort of be the general cost of creating like your first episode, for example?
Well, there are a variety of ways of doing it. You could look at it at like a price per minute, but you need to be doing a strategy first.
How much effort goes in and how much does that sort of approximately cost, whether it's in monetary terms or time or whatever?
Well, I don't know what podcast we're making, but let's say we're making an hour-long podcast like this.
Yep, yep.
There's all the equipment, which will be somewhere between $200 a microphone, the technology that we need to pay for, and then we get that hour-long edit, and then we need to do that paper cut first. So that's a couple of hours. This is my way is the faster way, by the way, right? So if you're doing it all on your own, that 2 hours will be 10 hours. If you're doing it this way, it'll be two, maybe three, depends on how much work needs to go in. You know, on a bad day, it could be four, but that would be about as much. But then the editing's done. And then for every kind of hour of editing, I would say there's always like 4 or 5 hours on top of that. So you've got the hour of the show, they've got a script, another 4 to 5 hours is about right. And then you'll need to mix and master, put some music in, get it to scratch. And that's the assumption that, you know, you don't have to hide bad audio, which you often have to do, or, you know, so then you finished it and then you need to make all the exports and all the social media stuff and the video version. So there's another few hours there. So, you know, that's probably a good couple of days there, just there if, you know, you were to, you know, 10 to 16 hours. Now, a lot of companies wouldn't necessarily go to that level and might have just trimmed a bit here and there and sent it out a few hours later.
Okay, so you're saying
that's like a $500 version, or there's a $2,000 version, or if you've got a whole bunch of different voices that need to go into it, you've got to pay the talent fees. They're $1,000 a pop for the voices. You know, there's a host fee to think about. The cheap and cheerful version, no one's getting paid. It's not very good. There's a point where it'll end up getting too expensive if you just do one-offs. And so that's where understanding the volume you've got, the process, streamlining things a lot more. Yes, you're spending much more over a year, but your per asset cost comes down quite a bit.
Okay, but we're still talking the high hundreds to low thousands kind of per episode. We had to use a ballpark figure just see if it was in someone's budget or not.
I would discourage anyone from seeing it in the high hundreds.
I would too.
Low thousands as a starting point. If it's a little series, but I understand why people would want to do that. I would just discourage them because their results won't be great. Now, the reason their results won't be great was probably because their story won't be well told. It'll be told nicely, but we're not going. I don't think people who are going to get into it are looking for nice.
Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate here because I've seen, and if you've ever seen Joe Rogan's first episode, he was a famous person already. He'd done that Fear Factor thing. He'd been a comedian. He had the brand factor. So people knew him. It was easy for him to get guests on the show because, he had a good network already. So I recall that he had a massive brand asset there. The audio quality and the equipment he used in his first episode was terrible. The picture behind him fell off halfway through and he sort of had to add all the stuff out. It was like back in the heydays of the early 2000s. So my thing to you was like, okay, content quality is really great, but isn't there a brand factor that really sits over the top of that? And can you get away with really poor quality in production if you've got that sort of fame and brand factor compensating for that?
Why are we talking about Joe Rogan, right? Like, Joe Rogan he's the exception. No one who's listening to this is Joe Rogan, therefore it's not relevant. No one who's even ever heard his podcast is as big as him, right? And so it's not relevant because that's not your audience right now, right? So it does matter to those people who are listening because their brand isn't famous. Therefore, it must sound like they are famous to even get a start, right?
What about some of your clients who are like medium famous? So they say they sort of already got a personal brand. Maybe they're not international famous like that, but like, somewhat well-known within their niche to some degree within their geographic sort of area. Do you find it easier getting traction and listeners and everything way more than like a nobody who comes to you going, make me famous and let's get heaps of downloads?
Yeah, no, we don't find it any easier. Even a famous person, a famous person making a podcast that does no promotion will not have that post. Like, it won't be listened to well or as well as it could be. You've got to promote the show. You've got to have an active media strategy to support whatever it is you're doing. Fame is great, but you're trying to jump into their feed. And so to get into someone's audio feed there's got to be a reason for them to want to do that.
We've had to talk about channels or initiatives. You did mention PR, which is, getting on other shows. If you had to go list through some of those channels without being too exhaustive, I mean, what else is there?
Spotify's a channel. All the radio stations can be a channel. The apps associated with the radio channels can be, like Listener and iHeartPodcast, Acast. So you can do that. So in all forms of social, TikTok, YouTube, etc., having your podcast on YouTube is very important because 30% of podcast listening is happening on YouTube.
One thing that comes across, we sort of mentioned about this misconception about our podcasts, costing nothing, just time. And we sort of put a monetary value or minimum on that. What other sort of major misconceptions do people have about podcasting that, you just want to sort of hit the nail on the head right now?
The first one is that it's easy and someone can do it internally. I think that's the first thing. The next one is that when they give out a brief to do a podcast, if there's no strategy in that brief, they won't get anything of value. I see briefs without distribution attached, which is remarkable.
Yeah, content for content's sake.
Yeah. Brands also, when they're making a podcast for their business, often will say, we want to use this person as a host.
And they're not a good host.
Yeah. Look, sometimes they're great. It's not about the talent. The problem is that what happens if that person leaves the business? What happens if everything that you do with your brand is done with that person? What if that person has no time? I think there are times where you want a generic voice There are times where you want a person from your company. There are times where you want a famous person, like in the Joe Rogan. Let's go back to Joe Rogan, right? There might be a moment where you go, you know, if this was done by a famous person, this would be really good. And so then you have to generate the extra money for their fee.
Or go halves, you know, some rev share thing. They increase their brand. You got to kick something off the back end of it.
Well, look, that's an interesting point that you've just brought up, because affiliate marketing is working really well in podcasting. So advertisers might want to, rather than spend the money, they could spend the money on a better commission for the person who's doing the affiliate marketing. And they can direct their performance agency to talk to podcasts. I think having an open mind. The other thing that people really need to understand if they want a podcast, thinking like producers, and if they've never made something, they have to be prepared to make something.
Yeah.
And when you make something, you're making for an audience, and the audience could just not give a shit about a brand's message. They couldn't care less. Couldn't care less about the points. They couldn't care. They just don't care. They don't want to be interrupted. They get that someone has to pay for it. So you got to think in a way that attracts that person, not detracts from that person's experience. And so you got to be really cognizant of your audience and not interrupting them and selling to them, and just be cool about it.
Yeah, it's kind of like product placement, right? The best product placement is the one that sort of goes under your subconscious. Like Apple, they just gave, you know, the laptops as props for all the movies for 10 years. And there was no sort of, from what I heard, there was no sort of monetary exchange there. It was just like, if you needed a laptop or anything, you know, that Apple products could fulfill. They made all these deals with the studios. Hey, you know, bang, just put it in your thing and here, you can keep it afterwards. And everyone was like, oh, this is awesome. There was very organic, you know, it wasn't just like this zoom up shot on the back of the laptop, for example, insert scene and say something positive about the brand. And I find that has a bigger effect than, you know, a blatant, this podcast is sponsored by blah, blah, blah.
No, that's right. And also, so the context of the advertising is incredibly important, and the way in which a brand promotes their involvement.
Just insert your ad here instead of like weave it into something contextual.
You know, in a dark, depressing story, and true crime is very well represented in podcasts, you've got to really just, you know, brands got to sponsor the show. It shouldn't be selling any products. So you've got to think about that context of what story you might end up in. That's why I think also in terms of the advertising, having like a direct relationship with the production of the show is very important. So I advocate sponsorship rather than CPM, because a CPM buy will cause potential issues, whereas a sponsorship or a relationship will have a much better effect for the audience.
I've seen some good sponsorship contexts, like on YouTube channels and audio channels. Like Tim Ferriss does it kind of well. He like goes, look, just before we get into this thing, I just wanted to tell you about this product, XYZ, which I actually like, and this is why I like it. And it just comes across, you kind of know the sort of paying to be there, or there's an affiliate thing on the back end, but at least they put it in context and he explains why he likes it. How do brands find podcasts that would be suitable and strike up these sponsorship deals? Like, do you go through agencies? Can you go direct? Is there a directory that you can find podcasts?
You can go to Podchaser. That's probably one of the directories. You can, if you find a show you like and you want to know more, you can always find, there's always an email for that show in the show notes, or there's a contact in most apps. The media agencies reach out to. If you've got a media agency relationship and you want to do it, they should know.
And sort of what ballpark, if we had to sort of go, what are the minimums here to sponsor a show? Well, I was talking about this just yesterday with somebody. For someone who has no idea, and let's just say it's like a small one and then a really famous one, what sort of range are we looking at here?
Sponsorships versus CPM. CPMs will be anywhere from $10 to $100, depending on, you know, how big it is, how famous they are, where it's based, blah, 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 right? What the topic is, et cetera, how many podcasts they actually put out. Sponsorships will go anywhere from a couple grand an episode to a few more per episode, plus a talent fee for any of the host read ads or host endorsed ads. But having a sponsorship relationship can allow other things to happen, sharing IP, et cetera. And, you know, there are minimum spends. I would say, like, you're not getting anything for less than 10 grand, but really that is just a floor to have a conversation. People aren't spending 10 grand. They should be spending, I saw an article recently that said 5 grand isn't enough. And I was thinking when I read it, 15 grand isn't enough, because if you're only doing 5 or 10 grand, you're thinking about it from an impression or a reach approach, whereas you should be, it should be thought of from a consideration approach or a brand awareness approach more. It's something that needs some repetition of the ad. So I saw Podsites just released a paper where they said 2 to 5 frequency per ad is like a good amount per ad. So, you know, you don't want to overdo it, but also I think it said you need to, you should be on 2 to 10 different podcast networks as well, because different podcast networks will have a different audience.
Sure.
And certain ones won't have the same one. So same audience, you know, across both. So you want to be across a bunch of them. But also, you know, if you spend a bit more money, if you know, if people are spending $50,000 in advertising in podcasts, you know, that feels like it's now part of your strategy. What's your strategy?
And that's right? Per episode you're talking about, these figures, or
no, just per the campaign. Okay, per so like episode a... figures are sort of, I'd say 2 to 5.
Yeah.
For a minimum of a few weeks.
Yep. We sort of talked about where podcasting started. Where do you see it heading? What are the headwinds that are coming in the future?
Well, I think the podcast sitcom is an underrepresented genre. Comedy is the number one podcast genre by quite some way. So I think we'll see more sitcoms. I think we'll see more interesting things done with audiobooks. I think we'll see way more interesting stuff happening internally as well. I think we'll see or hear internal podcasts becoming a thing. The audio pamphlet will start to become a thing now that the QR code is part of our life. I think smart speaker like Alexa or Google Skills underrepresented, and so we'll see more there. We're only just very much at the start of this media.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen even different software application here, but you know, companies like Yak doing audio based project management and sort of collaboration tools, some sort of visuals or videos like Loom or whatever, they're using little audio snippets to brief their teams. Yeah, I think it's interesting. We'll see where it goes in the future.
I think it's the number one growing media, and I think it's barely got going, really.
And a lot of what you said from my experience is true as well. Like, I'm at 35 episodes in 2 years, and I've only just seen in the last little while this sort of really big, steep ramp up. And I was like, wow, you know, I went from smaller figures to very much larger figures. So, you know, I get it. I think, you know, the CMO tenure is only like 2 years. So by the time your podcast gets going, which is around 1.5 to 2 years, then, you know, that's pretty much past the tenure of most marketing people. So I can see why it's not used, even though it can be effective.
Which is a shame. That's why whenever we do a brief, we generally tell, impart the suggestion that they should start to consider the fact that we're going to do a series 2 now and think about different applications to bring audio into the world. Where are your other pain points? You know, what's not working in written form or video form? Audio can help that.
Any books that you've read recently that's really changed your thought process on this topic or this sort of genre before?
Well, I don't read books on this topic because that would be off-brand for me. But the Paul Simon, Malcolm Gladwell audiobook called Miracle and Wonder really changed my perception of what an audiobook could be. And the Eric Nazum book, Make Noise, is a really great introduction to podcasting. I think for a lot of people, it could really help if someone's brand new to it or if someone's made something and they want to know how to be better at it. I think that's a great book.
What about favorite sort of websites that are your go-to websites? Can be anything that's really sort of changed your mind?
Sure. Brian Barletta's Sound Profitable podcast and website is really amazing. James Cridland, who does the Pod News daily podcast update. Those two things are required reading and listening for me. Tom Webster also, who does a podcast and has a blog as well. Tom's actually joining Brian Barletta together now, which is pretty cool.
What are some pieces of tech, can be software or hardware, that help you do your job daily a lot better?
So we distribute on Omni. We use Squadcast for video. We use Sonnet for transcriptions. We use the Adobe suite for audio and video. We use Frame.io for the review and approval, which is important.
But, you know, coming back to you, what do you want to give a shout out to?
Anyone who wants to have a, you know, an audio experience in their business or communicate via audio or wanting to know more about what a brand logo sounds like or could sound like for their brand or, you know, music composition. Anyone who wants to do something a bit different in audio, we'd love to have a chat to them. Just check out our website, ample.com.au, or find us on Spotify or Apple or LinkedIn. I'll give you the links. stick the links in the show notes.
Okay, I've got a lot to learn. Thanks again for your time, and look forward to talking again soon.
Mate, thanks, John. Well done.
And now for part two. I actually don't know how podcast promotion works. I was told you do. So if you had to like explain some of the basic options to somebody, what would kind of those main areas be?
Oh, Lord. I mean, there's so many variables. And I think if anybody ever tells you, I've got the secret black book on how to build audiences and get you to number one, they're lying. So don't buy what they're selling, because it's a really incredibly complicated space. So there's a number of factors that really drive success from a podcast perspective. If you're a big name, that always helps, but we've done podcasts with big names that have completely flopped as well. So it's not always a true science on that point. If you've got support from the big players like Spotify and Apple, who are going to help you feature on the homepage and things like that, that always helps. But it's not easy. And I think anybody venturing into that space and thinking it's just like social, I'll slowly build up my following, or I'll do something viral like a TikTok video and then I'll explode, it doesn't quite happen that way. So there's a couple of things I think that are foundational that you can set up in place to sort of get you started. And then it's all the other little things on top, the viral element, the PR, that will help you grow and get the podcast out there. Now, the foundational stuff is actually pretty simple and mostly low cost as well. So the first one I always recommend is SEO.
Okay.
SEO, like any other channel, it works incredibly well, taps into search demand around your topic, things that your audience are looking for, and it's free. So when you're setting up your podcast, it's always important to have a social channel and a website. Use the website, use all those transcript programs out there, plug your podcast in every episode, put out a transcript, post it on a page. All of a sudden, you're starting to help out from an SEO perspective. You also have to be on Google. I know that audiences listen to podcasts on Google about 1.5%, but it helps with the SEO. So make sure.
Do you mean Google Podcasts here, or in terms of their podcast product? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. You also should be optimizing your show notes. Your show notes also are triggered. They trigger SEO. So make sure you've got plenty of your keywords in there. You're maximizing the characters. You're linking out, and use that format as much as you can. Mix it up. Make sure if you've got guests in there, put their names in. They're going to have their own kind of like equity that you can leverage. And then social. So podcasts should not live on their own. Social always is a great way to just drive additional reach. Even if people aren't listening to every single episode, they'll be reminded that you're around and may stumble across an episode that they really like. So start off building your social channels. You might be in the millennial space, which means that TikTok is a much better channel for you. You might be in business, so think about how you leverage LinkedIn. Just find the right channel for you. You don't have to be everywhere either. And think about how you're using your content to drive people to listen. So this doesn't have to be hard, and you don't have to be a video creator. There are platforms out there that do this for you. We use a platform called Sonnet, actually, which is a AI-driven content editing tool. And so what you can do is plug in your podcast, press a button, and it will create 20 different small snippets for you that you can then post straight onto your social channels from the actual platform. So there are a lot of shortcuts you can do with that one, but that is super helpful. There's two things that Sonnet does really well. What Sonnet does is it creates snippets at the touch of a button so that you can have all of this great content in social-friendly formats that you can post. The second thing it does really well is save all that content in your library. So if something topical is happening, crypto is a big conversation right now, right? If you are a business podcaster and 2 years ago you made a hit prediction that crypto was going to crash, you can go into that library and search for the keywords and it will unearth that content, create a snippet for you, and you can post it on social. So you're continually driving people back and using your library of content as well.
You have that bank of content and you're repurposing it for other channels, like transcribing or making a blog post on Google for SEO purposes, or creating little small snack. I call them snackable content, little highlight clips, or like, you know, question specific little snippets that, you know, because social media generally, unless it's YouTube, they don't like really long videos.
No, 20 seconds max of some really funny grabs or something that's really compelling. We all know them. Go look at some of the bigger podcasters, like the Joe Rogans of the world, political ideas aside. He does it really well. He'll post a snip that is just super compelling and you're like, oh, okay, I really want to listen to this one.
Well, Gary Vee, you know, his marketing advice aside also.
Yeah, don't worry about if you like Gary Vee or not. He's a bit polarizing, but exactly. He also does a fantastic job. And he's a little rough around the edges, to be fair. But, you know, people don't mind that. It's about the content. They're not watching you. They're listening to you.
This is really good from a foundational perspective, like things that anybody could do without or negligible budget, I would say. Yeah. Let's just say, though, I wanted to go next level. So I'm getting some traction, perhaps like where I am right now, where I'm sort of hitting some figures where I'm like, oh, if I was going to hire someone, you know, like your agency or another one out there that specializes in this, what kind of things would we be looking at? Say we had a, you know, a couple of grand a month budget upwards.
Generally, I'll only speak from us because I think we're a little different to some of the other companies out there. So the other companies that you might go with will sort of put you in a network and they might give you kind of the standard plan. And so you're part of a bit of network because at the end of the day, they're going to be adding you in a buy for an audience. And so you're one of 10 or 15 podcasts that an advertiser can buy into. We play a little differently, as in we actually don't consider ourselves a network. We look at individual creators and individual podcasts and treat them as such. And so what we would do at the first step is obviously look at what you've done and say, this is great. Let's see if we can make some tweaks, maybe some sound design, that kind of thing. But we'll also evaluate who your audience is. And I have to say that this is probably one of the biggest mistakes I see most podcasters make in their early days. They don't really know or define who their audience is. They make content for themselves. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's why, if you're passionate, that's why things are successful. But they only think about themselves in that context and what they would like to hear. So what we do is we help them define who the audience is much more clearly. And I'll use an example of why this is important. We picked up a podcast from quite a well-known comedian, actually. She's an Australian comedian. She's also a nurse. And so a lot of her comedy and her fans are nurses, and it's tailored towards nurses. The nurses' stories, a bit down and dirty, a bit awkward at times, but nurses love it. They love that shit. And so that's why she's so popular. But she was creating a podcast, in her words, that were anybody interested in health or in the health community. Well, we've just gone through a major global pandemic. That's everybody. So as a result, she was creating this podcast that was good and entertaining and she had a good following, but she was creating it for everybody. And so what we did when we picked it up is first and foremost said, we need to define who this actually is and you need to create to that audience. And this was an obvious one. It was nurses. The people coming back to listen were nurses. They weren't doctors, they weren't people like you or I who work in another industry and maybe are interested in health. It was nurses. And they felt comedic relief in it.
There's a lot of them too.
And there's a lot of them. There's 250,000 in Australia. That's huge. Yeah. And so what we did is we completely changed our direction, our approach, who the guests were. And then from a marketing perspective, then we thought, okay, like how do we reach nurses? And this is why it's important. There's no playbook. If anyone comes in and tells you, we'll put 10% in search and we'll put 20% in social, that's not right. You need to look at the audience and how you're reaching them. We created a Facebook community, steadily growing, getting people engaged. That was one way we did it. Another way, we promoted the podcast at her shows, flyers, handouts, signage, stuff like that. Yep. We're looking at signage within hospitals, another great way to reach nurses. Maybe a bit of social targeting, but that's a bit hit and miss, especially at the moment with the targeting issues. So that's how we have used different channels as a way to grow our audiences. So again, there's no real playbook. There is a humongous playbook of tactics that we could deploy, but there's no set rule in what we would use to reach an audience.
I was having this discussion with someone like, look, what you were saying there about the nurses is kind of like pick a lane and stick to it kind of thing. That's what Yes. everyone in marketing says. Like you either go general, trying to be everything like general news, or you pick a lane and specialize. But, and then it comes down to like knowing what media your audience will consume to then find out which channels to use to promote. But I have seen some podcasts, and maybe they're in these networks, they were doing Spotify ads and radio ads as well. Obviously, you're already listening to that sort of similar medium, yes. so it sort of makes sense. Do you sometimes put that in the mix?
Yeah, we definitely leverage our own network and cross-promote some of our other podcasts. And it's a benefit of joining a network. You will get that additional exposure. The other thing that works really well by joining a network is you get access to other podcasts. So we will put other guests in other podcast episodes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so you kind of get that cross reach, cross exposure, as well as, you know, when you're posting, hosts should post about you on their channels and stuff. So you're just getting that extra love coming through. So it's definitely something that we deploy within all of our sort of promotional mix. When we pick up a podcast, there's a few things we do. We create the trailer, we create the video trailer, and we create an ad. And that is to run across the network. It doesn't okay. work as well as probably I would say, though. Another tactic that actually works a bit better is taking a 2 or 3 minute segment from the show and airing it in another podcast.
I was, you know, recently reading a blog post or something, and someone was saying how he promoted his podcast and that kind of thing. And it was like getting guests that were famous and leveraging yes. their popularity. Obviously, yes. I've noticed when I've posted like a guest with a big following, you get a bit more spike than usual. Doesn't always, isn't always the case. It depends how they've promoted it. But I had one person that was famous in the US, had his own blog post, like one of the original blogs on the internet, and he posted something and I was like, where'd this spike come from? And it was a blog post. So it really depends on the depth of their following. Other ones I thought they were popular on social media and then they post something and end up getting no traction. I think the guest is interesting. And I know a lot of people do that as a bit of a boon, which is short term. And what was the other thing? Yeah, that's right. Shout outs. So you could say, I also like this other podcast at the beginning of your intro, and they would do the same for you. And then you sort of cross-pollinate audiences that way. Is that what you're kind of talking about with this network effect?
More than a shout out. So a really great tactic is talking to other podcasts or even brands. Talk about a great way to get exposure when you're in those early days and you don't have enough numbers that is attractive to a brand. You know, you're not really hitting the thousands yet. You're kind of really early days. It's hard for a brand to invest because they're comparing it against many other channels that are much more accountable and a lot cheaper from a CPM perspective. So talk to them about Contra. A lot of brands might have their own podcasts, as well as obviously their digital channels, their website, their social. Talk to them about giving them a regular segment out of the content that you've created. And we've done this, to use the nursing example again. In the early days, we did this with a official organization that supports nurses. And so they had a regular podcast. They were looking to freshen it up a bit. It was a bit dry, as you could imagine. So they thought having a comedian and everyone's favorite nurse comedian would be great. And so all we did was package up 3 minutes, top and tailed it with a message about the podcast and how to listen. And they've been inserting it into their podcast. And that's been helping us grow. You know, they did the same with their newsletters. When they talk about what the content in their podcast, they talk about our podcast. And so it's a nice way to do it. I think in the early days, it's very, you know, you start to see some numbers grow and it's very easy to get quite protective of your product and not want to share content out. But when it comes to podcasts, you are fighting against thousands of podcasts and most people only listen to 1 or 2 episodes a week. So the more exposure that you can get in other people's podcasts, give it to brands, let them run it. It's all at the end of the day, adding to the point where your audience numbers at a really palatable level for advertisers to jump on board.
Yeah, great. I've also seen this thing where, and I'm sort of getting to the end of my expertise here, but where you can kind of put someone else's feed into your feed, your podcast feed, so that when they publish an episode, it sort of drops in and is alerted to your audience. And then does that happen as well? Or
you can do that. Pros and cons of that, though, I feel, because your audience expects something from you, not from somebody else. So great for you if you're jumping into somebody else's feed that's got a much bigger audience than you. Yay. It might help you out. But if it's your feed, I don't know so much. It's a surprise, I think, that audiences and listeners don't always love. It's better to do it in the episode that they're listening to. Have the host explain why there's a little segment in here and then run the segment. It's a nicer way to do it without disrupting the listener. It's a bit like cheating, you know?
Yeah, exactly. When you as the podcast host then go onto someone else's as a guest, a lot of people ask me, like, how does that work if they haven't done it before? How does that whole ecosystem work? Is that, you know, direct approach? Is that going through agents or agencies?
It's a tough one because, to your point, there's a lot of people who are doing it just also to raise their exposure. So if you are someone who feels like you have something really important to say and you don't have anyone representing you and you want to go direct, really pitch why and what you want to talk about and why you like their podcast and what you feel that you could deliver together is my very first thing. Yeah. Don't just
like the
go,
pitch.
I'm the CEO of X company and I want to be on your podcast. Or even like we sometimes get like the EA of the CEO who's not even like, right, they're just like the CEO has asked me to ask you. And it's like,
It's like I compare it to like the LinkedIn connection request. It's like the ones that go, oh, I'm awesome and be part of my connection. Here's a pitch for my product,
right.
You know, like buy my product,
yeah.
Versus the ones that go, hey, I read one of your articles and that really resonated with me. I'm also working on something like this and, you know, it could be worth having a conversation. You'd be going, oh, yeah, I'll take that one.
And don't take it personally either. If they say no, you don't know what else they've got planned. You don't know if they have a similar expert to you already lined up. You know, you just don't know those things. So, sure, hedge your bets, do a call out, see what happens, give it a crack. The best thing to do, though, is build relationships. It's much easier if you do join a network as well, if a network has decided that they want to take you on. You know, if you're in your early days, I probably wouldn't say going straight to like the big guys. You can come to us. We like to take the great stories with more of the niche audience. Jumping onto a network is a lot easier because it's a tactic that we deploy to cross promote and drive audiences. As a last resort, you can employ a PR agency to help you. And so this is also what PR agencies do.
Why do you say it's the last resort? Maybe it doesn't always work out.
It costs money.
Yeah.
It costs money. And you know, you're paying, you're starting out and you're probably not making any money on your podcast. So if you really want to invest in it, go engage a PR agency. This is what they do for a living. But you know, you'll pay per hour for them and there's no guarantee that you'll get any placements. So you just, you know, you got to realize what you're jumping into.
From what I know, like they start at like one and a half to generally 5K a month sort of retainers. And then sometimes those people aren't podcast experts. So they're more of a personal branding thing. And
that's right.
Yeah. I've heard some horror stories.
It's very hard to find, the PR experts who know how to market podcasts and how to build those connections and have those connections. Most of them still are very sort of traditional media and digital publications and that kind of thing. So
you mentioned getting featured on that sort of ticker at the top of whatever podcast client app, whether it's, you know, Apple or, you know, that sort of recommended sort of section.
The recommended.
That comes up. Or featured. I know I had a friend I was talking to also does a podcast. And he said he got there very early on the piece. And he exploded from that because it was always popping up and he just got heaps of audience from that. Obviously, they're trying to monetize some of that now as well, so you can kind of pay to be there or sponsored. Do you find that an effective way to do things or not?
Of course. Like anything, if people are jumping on to listen to something but they're unsure of what they want to listen to, being the first thing that piques their interest is excellent. It is a great way to drive exposure. But it's hard. And unfortunately, with all of the platforms starting to invest in their own original content, it's becoming increasingly harder to get access to that premium placement because they are promoting their own original content as well. So it's a challenge and it's a real shame as well because I think there's some incredible storytellers out there and some incredible podcasts that deserve that placement. Give them a chance, give them a day, help them to sort of build their profile, but it's hard and becoming increasingly harder. It's very much up to the discretion of the platforms and whether they think you're noteworthy.
One interesting thing, you kind of just alluded to it, but like I've got the best audience growth just from people recommending me. There's just word of mouth. If you've got good or half good content that's, you know, targeted well, that people are resonating with, like they tell others who then tell others who
that's
then tell
right.
others. And it sort of takes off. Do you find a lot of the lower quality, you would say, productions are harder to kind of push and promote?
There's different types of podcasts. Interesting you said lower quality.
Well, yeah, what is quality?
What do you mean by lower quality? Yeah, what
well,
is quality?
Exactly.
We could do a whole podcast about what is podcast quality.
Okay, well, there was a really famous meme, which is this, you know, video meme. I think it was TikTok or something. And this guy, was just kind of making fun of podcasters. And it was, you know, how they cut themselves, but two different characters and sort of left and right. It was just him going, oh, yeah, I'm really glad to be on your podcast. And so we're going to talk about podcasting today. And it was just this airy-fairy 5 minutes of just them talking about
waffle.
Nothing. And they're just talking about what they're going to talk about and never get to actually talking about anything.
Yes.
And that's what I would deem, you know, low quality, because anyone can do that. Anyone can find anybody to talk about that
Correct.
Surface level stuff. So, but yeah, what is quality? It's a good question. What do you think?
Really hard, but I'm going to give you my POV. But always remember, quality is in the eye of the listener, or the ear of the listener, I should say. I think really good, interesting content that is tailored to a specific audience and leaves them learning something, interested in something, wanting to learn more. That's the beauty of a podcast. Podcast, for most people, is their number one place where they go to learn something. So if you look at any of the research, a recent Roy Morgan study last year said it perfectly. It's the number one channel for Australians to go to when they want to learn something. You know, it was at the bottom. Online content. I really think that's because there's so much clickbaity blogs out there for SEO purposes that people
Yeah, pushing an angle as well with like the guise of being good content, but it's just a soft sell.
Yeah. And so it could be the formulaic, I'm going to do an interview. Funny we're doing this right now, but it's interesting people that you feel like you're going to learn something from, and you're just going to get these amazing nuggets that sit with you for a while. Or it's a format that you've never heard before. I mean, we've launched a really great podcast with actually one of our audio producers had this idea with his mate, who's also an audio producer. He loves space. His mate's interested in space. And so they basically, each episode is him talking to his mate about all these really interesting things that happened in space. For instance, did you know that a man smuggled a corned beef sandwich into space?
A real corned beef sandwich?
A real corned beef sandwich. Ooh. And it blew up NASA. The whole program almost went away. There was a big Senate hearing. It was a big, 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 big deal in the 70s. And, you know, there's stories like that they share, but it's done in such a really fun, accessible way. The host is extremely well-researched. His mate is not well-researched at all and a very funny guy. So he's listening it for the first time and cracking some great jokes. It's called Mates in Space. And it's an entertaining listen. And I've learned something. I've laughed and I've learned something. What I think is not good quality is content that's not tailored. You can still target a general audience, but have really interesting topic and stay on topic and, you know, let your audiences know what you're talking about. But the podcast, to your point, that just kind of are there for the sake of being there and they waffle and they don't really teach you anything and they're kind of boring, that's not good quality. And the other thing that I'd say for all those new podcasters out there, sound quality is important, but your content is more important. So if you are concerned that you don't have a good quality podcast, it's your content, it's not your sound that you need to focus on. The sound can evolve. You'll end up getting bigger. You can hire people to do your sound design. You know, we pick things up and we add all those lovely little bits in between that make it engaging and fun. Don't worry about that just yet. Get your story right, build your audiences, and get that kind of like consistent storytelling going. That's what drives your quality.
Great. No, I think that's a really good answer. Over to you. Is there anything particularly you want to promote and get out there?
We've got a couple of cool podcasts out, which I'd love people to have a listen to and support because they're the newbies. So one is Mates in Space, and the other one is called Bevz, B-E-V-Z. Ooh. Wiz says. She's fantastic. She's a young, up-and-coming 21-year-old comedian, and she sits down actually with some pretty big names in the Gen Z and young millennial space to talk about what it's like growing up as a millennial, which quite frankly is not very easy for these poor kids who've also spent their early years when we were all out in the pubs having a great time. They've spent it in lockdown.
I'll leave it there, and we'll have to have a champagne next time.
Sounds good. See ya.
So that was another episode that's part of our 48 different growth levers, which I'm covering bit by bit. And that's the complimentary episode to one of the original episodes I've ever done with Tim Beanland on how to start a podcast. So we've done maybe 7 of these so far. There's many more of these promotional channel specific episodes to go. And as always, thanks for listening. And if you have any comments, make sure you DM me on LinkedIn or tag me on Twitter. @DoseOfJohn is my Twitter handle, or @OfficialJohnJames on LinkedIn. Otherwise, you can find me on Instagram underneath Champagne Society. Make sure you follow, review this podcast, and you know, tip the notifications thing to receive alerts next time an episode drops. And as always, I try to upload these episodes in full and the highlights actually on YouTube. So go to the Hybrid Sea YouTube page to look for those. If you have a chance, just Google and search for Chris and Yaniv, Yaniv, and their podcast, The Startup Podcast. But that's all for now. Thanks for listening.